Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle, the Friday edition. I hope you backed it in, denimed up, and you finished the week strong, because we did. A day after UFC fighter Devin Powell melted the internet after he shook off a ruptured testicle, he then goes legend in the jungle when he told me his amazing story, one that's about a lot more than just one horrific injury. Tiger Woods was back in SoCal with his bats, and the dude managed to give me both an A and an F in his opening round at the Riv. Mets manager Mickey Callaway learned the hard way that you can drop a term like dry humping in the clubhouse, but it doesn't go quite as well in front of a live mic. My thanks also to Providence College basketball coach Ed Cooley for coming back in, former FSU safety and first-round draft pick. Derwin James was in studio too. Alvy. The week that was is amazing. I can't wait to get to that. In fact, let's get this whole thing rolling right now. Devin Powell is my guest. Devin, my man, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Devin, I'm great. I'm great. The thing is, I mean, given the nature of your injury, I'm not sure if I can't wait to talk to you or if I never want to talk to you because of the nature of that injury, but here we are. Listen. Why don't we start at the very beginning? You're from South Berwick, Maine. For those who have never been to York County, Maine, what was your life like there?
It was far from what I'm doing now. I grew up playing music and just pretty much doing everything but contact sports. And I finally got out of school, stopped playing music because everybody became an adult and grew up. And I was working at a passport center, complacent with what I was doing, and I just wasn't really happy with life, and I found martial arts, and I started doing it every single day, and I fell in love with it. So, I love New England. I love being in the snow. I love being able to surf and snowboard and all that stuff. So, I love the place. Everybody complains about it, but I'm a huge fan. I live in Wells, Maine now, and right by the beach. It's awesome.
Devin Powell joining us. I mean, this story to me is getting even better. So, I mean, you were kind of late to it, but you said in describing MMA, I mean, found it and, quote, it's in your blood. It sounds kind of cliche, but what do you mean by that? It's in your blood.
Yeah, I mean, I've suffered a lot of injuries training and in fights. Like, I was on the Dana White Looking for a Fight TV show. That's how I got signed to the UFC. And I took the fight short notice, and in the fight I was doing really well, and then I got caught with a good shot that just snapped my nose. It was pretty much my nose was on the side of my face. I tried to wipe it away because I thought it was a glob of Vaseline, but it was actually just my nose. But I powered through. I ended up dropping the guy, hopping on his back, choking him out, and then hopping up on the cage and being like, Dana, is my nose broken? He's just laughing and shaking his head yes. There's just, you know, it's sometimes the fight's in you. There's people that are phenomenal at fighting, but they look for a way out. I could have easily just been a hermit about this whole thing, but injuries happen. This is just a really terrible one, and it's just, you know, it's a little more personal, but, you know, I could have sat back and not said anything, but I preferred to be open about it. And I mean, I'm sure somebody is going to wear the pup forever now and avoid this injury, so hopefully some good things will come of it, aside from you getting a little bit of extra, you know, publicity.
Devin Powell joining us. That is so great. Devin, I was thinking exactly that yesterday. When I thought about this and I saw your tweet to me, I'm like, this guy, what is with this guy? If this happened to me, I would be a hermit. I would go away, and you're out in front of it and you're making light of it and you're having fun with it. You know, I'm glad you mentioned Dana White because I wanted to ask you about that. You had come through a stretch where you had 4 fights in 6 months and you were taking a little bit of time off, but then you got that message with the possibility of being a part of Dana White's show looking for a fight. So what was your reaction when you got that message from him? And then how much time did you have off, or how much time did you have to get ready for that?
So it was pretty much an instantaneous yes. There's really no options. I had 3 weeks to get ready for it. I was definitely on the injured reserve list, but I'd much rather go in there hurt than not go in at all and not ever have this opportunity that I've had with the UFC. And the UFC is the absolute pinnacle. You know, there's no comparing it. You can fight your whole life and do incredible and never get your shot. So this was my clear-cut chance to get to the big leagues, and I absolutely had to jump on it. So that's what I did. I didn't come that far to not hop on a chance to keep chasing my dreams. So
Now, Devin, you said also during that fight, though, things were going pretty well, and then you took a pretty good shot, and your nose was on the side of your face, and you didn't know it at first. You thought it was Vaseline and just tried to wipe it off. You got word after the fight that Dana wanted to talk to you. What did he want to talk about, and what was that moment like for you?
Yeah, so it was pretty surreal. I went out back after the fight. You know, you're riding the high on the adrenaline. I went out back and saw the doctor. My coach actually fixed my nose right after the fight in the cage. She's like, I'm going to do this now before it hurts anymore. I didn't even feel it when he straightened it, but whenever they read the decision, I was already looking a little bit better, still ugly, but a little bit better. But I went out back again, riding that high, just feeling good. And then it slowly starts fading away. The pain starts setting in. I actually tore my knee in that fight too. I tore my MCL. And so I was just kind of sitting on the floor. I had a 5-year-old daughter who didn't even want to look at me. I was just covered in all my blood, and it was just gross. I don't blame her, but you kind of sit there and you don't really know what the future holds, and you just think that you put on a great performance, but you really can't tell what they're thinking. And then shortly before the night ended, before everybody left the arena, he came out back with his crew. So I got up off the floor, shook his hand. Him and Matt Serra and Din Thomas were all there. They all just were cracking jokes, making fun of my shorts because they're lime green and like purple and crazy colored, and telling me how I gotta have big balls to be able to wear those, ironically enough. And he just said it was my prime time right now, because I was 29 at the time. I might have been, actually I was 28, I believe. And he just shook my hand. He said, I'm interested, pick up your phone. So a couple days later, Joe Silva, who was the previous matchmaker for the UFC, called me and gave me my contract, and that was that. He stuck to his word, and he liked me, and I'm now on the Dana White Looking for a Fight show, and it's pretty incredible and surreal.
It's incredible. Devin Powell joining us. Now, when you mention it, seems kind of self-evident, but when you say your coach fixed your nose right there in the ring, how did your coach fix your nose, which was on the side of your face, right there in the ring?
So my coach, Adam Rivera, he's been with me since the very beginning. His claim to fame is Brandon Vera, an old school MMA fighter who's still active and incredible. He had all of his teeth knocked out by Brandon Vera. I think Brandon Vera might have broken his nose in that fight too, but he's fixed a fair share of fighters' noses. So pretty much he just put his thumbs together. I think you usually use like popsicle sticks if you have them, or Q-tips, but we weren't too equipped with the right equipment. So he just put his thumbs together and just clicked it right into place. And it went from pretty much a question mark to crooked straight line.
Okay, Devin, we haven't even talked about what we were going to talk about. This is mind-blowing to me. So then you're training with Joe Lozon, and Joe is a legend in the sport. Joe's an absolute monster. What's it like to train with him?
It's amazing training with Joe. He's one of the most giving fighters or coaches that is out there in the Northeast. He's very open about training. Some academies are very, I don't want to say selfish, but they don't like having other people to come train with them. You know, they kind of keep it in-house. But Joe is really onto something. The fact that we're in the Northeast, there's these gyms, and I actually went and trained at one, American Top Team. They have thousands of fighters, and that's in Coconut Creek, Florida. But in the Northeast, we don't have too many guys that are on that next level. We have great fighters, but we need to come together and we need to work together to stay relevant. So that's what I do. I go there every Monday and train with him. He lets my team come and travel. It's like a 2.5-hour drive, but 100% worth it. That's how my Mondays play out.
All right, Devin Powell joining us. All right, so I was going to say, set the stage. I mean, according to your description from Instagram, the two of you were practicing knees on the ground. What does that involve?
All right, so here's the whole misconception, or this is really what happened.
Sure.
So we were training. He has a no-gi Brazilian jiu-jitsu class, which jiu-jitsu is similar to like wrestling, tennis and grappling, basically. So we were just grappling. We're competing with each other, just rolling with each other. He was trying to pass my guard, is what it's called.
Sure.
Trying to get past my feet to control my upper body. And as he tried to pop his leg up and cut it to the side, his knee went straight down and just sandwiched my testicle against my pubic bone, and it exploded it. So the reason that I had said the thing about the knees on the ground, I was already all all medicated, and I was told I was having surgery, and I had the ambulatory staff with me. I'm like, all right, well, you got to go into emergency surgery, so we're going to go now. I was like, oh, man, well, here's an opportunity. Can I get a quick picture? And it just ended up blowing up. And I made that kind of as a joke, also medicated, ready to go to surgery. And then everybody just thought that we were actually trying to, like, pop each other's testicles or something.
Clones, can I have one moment so I can talk to you about Stamps.com? It goes without saying that the U.S. Postal Service is an important tool for any business reaching every household every single day. Now, Stamps.com is the easiest way to access all the amazing services of the post office. Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. You can print postage for any mail class right from your own computer, with the exact amount of postage every single time, so you never underpay or overpay. And Stamps.com saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I love Stamps.com, and the reason I use Stamps.com is because it is convenient, it is easy, it is reliable, it is so efficient, it saves me so much time. I love this product. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. So go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Jungle. To get this deal, go to Stamps.com and enter the code name Jungle. I love this product. I know you will too. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Devin Powell joining us. All right, so now we know exactly what happened technically. I mean, when it happened, I mean, I would assume, but did you immediately know that something was wrong, really wrong?
Yeah, I thought that it was exactly what happened. I just also thought I was being a little baby. I felt it, and it felt like something had exploded. And I just really wasn't sure. I just know sometimes with the area so sensitive and kind of where you can really get a little more scared with such an area, I thought I was maybe just being a little baby about it. So I kind of waved it off. I went to the bathroom. I was like, all right, you're going to take a peek. You're going to see how this looks. And if it looks okay, maybe you can get back out there. And I went out, kind of stripped down, checked it out, and it looked not too good. And it also felt like I had a third testicle in there. It was pretty terrible. So I went back out, and I just pretty much laid on the mat while everybody kept training. I laid there for like 30, 40 minutes probably, just pretty silent while everybody crack jokes and stuff because nobody understood the severity of it.
Devin, I mean, if you've thought that you were not being courageous enough after suffering that, what does that leave me where I'm not sure I'm going to even make it through this conversation? Not brave at all. That's where it leaves me. Devin, you didn't even seek immediate medical attention, right? As the story goes, how long did you wait?
So here's the thing. I don't like throwing anyone under the bus, and I understand there's policies and stuff. So the UFC is absolutely incredible, and they take care of their fighters like huge. So they have policies for training related injuries. So basically, there's a portion just like any other insurance you have to cover, which I'll have to take care of eventually, and then after that they take care of your injuries. So I went immediately to a walk-in clinic or like a health center right next to Joe's Academy. And they pushed me out the door because I didn't have a traditional insurance. They said that they couldn't see me, and they're like, kick rocks. So wow. I left. I went and got a drink, and I went and laid in bed for like a day and a half because I was in so much pain. I was like, well, they won't see me, so I'm going to just try and ride it out. Otherwise, I would have had the surgery probably right away. So, yeah, that's what happened. I don't want to say the name of the place, and I know there's policies, but it was pretty unfortunate. And that's, I know, a whole new topic, talking about, like, healthcare and all that, but that's really what happened.
No, I see what you're saying right there. Exactly. That's a whole different thing, but go kick rocks. So you literally went and had a drink and then went to lie down. I mean, I've got to ask, when something like that happens, what did you drink?
I had a Dark and Scary, which is, instead of a Dark and Stormy, it's 151 instead of the 90 proof stuff.
You know it.
Or 80 proof.
You know it.
So, real strong.
Devin Powell.
Feel the pain a bit.
My man. So exactly what is the treatment and the rehab process for a ruptured testicle? Now what?
So as far as I know, what happened, the testicle pretty much exploded. So there's like a sack inside the sack, and the way that I kind of equated it to was like if somebody takes a bag of chips, and the testicle is the bag, and they kneel on it, and the chips all go flying out. That's the chips would be the inside of the testicle. So they had to take all the inside, shove them back inside the bag, and then sew it right back up. And then they had to take the sack on the outside and then glue that all together. And it looks like a horror movie. It's terrible. It looks like a Frankenstein creation.
I'm sorry I asked, my man.
An adult.
I'm sorry I asked you that question. Devin, you're amazing.
No,
I mean, you know, it's your approach really is amazing. I want to read a quote that you said. You said, quote, "I'm not gifted at all, but I show up every single day when no one's here and I train my butt off. That's what you got to do. You'll fall, but you have to get back up." End of quote. Seems to me most people fall and they don't want to get back up. You suffer a ruptured testicle, but you want to get back up and you want to keep fighting. And I've got to ask the most obvious question. Why is that? What is that?
I felt what it's like to do something for a living that I didn't love, and I don't ever want to feel that way again. There are risks to martial arts. There's risks to being, you know, a firefighter or a police officer. But if it's what you truly love, you got to roll the dice. And if you hurt yourself, then you got to come to terms with it. You got to get better, and you got to be better. So that's all I'm going to do, and I'm always going to do that. I have my own academy, Nostos MMA, and I have a huge youth program and all those kids look up to me, and it's a huge responsibility. I'll never fall on my face and not get back up, not for myself, not for my family, not for the students I teach. I love martial arts, and if I didn't love them, then it'd be easy to stay down and just do something else. But, you know, I just got to take everything in stride, just continue to be a better version of myself, you know, whether it's after a broken orbital socket like my first UFC fight or ruptured testicle in a silly training accident. It's all just, you know, all just part of it. I could be negative about it and I could say, why did this happen to me? But, you know, I'm talking to Jim Rome right now. It's pretty cool.
Dude, I'm talking to Devin Powell right now, and I think it's really cool, and I think it's awesome that you're right. You could say, why me, and you could be negative, but you turn this thing on its head, and I think you took one of the biggest negatives ever and made it one of the biggest positives ever. So when you're healed up and you're ready to go, what then is the dream? Where do you go from here?
I want, if anybody can tweet Dana White, Sean Shelby, whatever, I've just been trying to get a third UFC fight. My last one, I lost a split decision. It was a tough fight. The strike count, I doubled my opponents. And I just, every time I fight, I fight my heart out, and I just want another one. I know there's so many fighters in the UFC. One thing people don't really realize, John Anik actually broke it down for me, but because of how many fighters there are in the UFC and how many cards there are, it equates to less than two fights per year per fighter. So it's a lot to try and get through the list to get your next fight. So I'm just here training no matter what. You know, I'm training every day. If I'm hurt, I'm watching videos and I'm studying and I'm doing everything I can to get better every single day. And that's what I'll be doing until that next call I get. So I just want my next one, get back in the octagon, get healthy and take care of my family, take care of some medical bills and you know, get better every day, 1% better.
My man, Devin Powell, UFC lightweight, 8-3-0, suffered that ruptured testicle in training. Join the program to talk about that. Clones, if you're listening right now, you should do that. You should tweet at him, and you should also tweet at Dana White and say, we want to see this guy. He deserves another opportunity. All he wants is another fight, another chance. Tweet at Dana White and let him know you heard Devin Powell on this show, and this is a guy that you want to see fight. Make sure you do that. Devin, I can't tell you. Dude, you are awesome. You are a tremendous person with an amazing message. And, I mean, aside from making light of this, I love the power and the message you bring to it, my man. So, great to meet you. Great to have you on the show. And I promise you, this will not be the last time you and I have a conversation.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Cool. That's a phrase that I never, ever wanted to hear or say ever again. That's a phrase that you can never unhear. Ruptured testicle. Not only did that happen to him, not only is he dealing with that, but my man has turned the ultimate negative into the greatest positive of all. I want to start with some golf. Now, I knew the first time that Tiger Woods brought his bats to Riviera in a dozen years, I knew that was going to be eventful. I just didn't think that it would be that eventful because the cat gave us a little bit of everything in that opening round, 1-over-72. Some good, some bad, some downright hideous. And while I did ask El Gato to give me an A or give me an F before the tournament, I'll be straight. I didn't think this guy would be able to give me both an A and an F. Because carding 5 birdies at the Riv is an A. Hitting just 7 greens is an F. And losing your rock in a tree the first time you break out the big stick is downright disgusting. But because I'm such a positive guy, why don't we start with the good? You see, contrary to popular belief, I am not rooting for this guy to be terrible. Let me start with the positives. This dude's short game is pretty electric right about now. The cat was rolling it in like the good old days when he was sliding into green jackets and stacking major championships on his mantle. He took just 25 putts to get around 18 holes. This guy was basically automatic from 10 feet, the way he used to be when he was crushing it on the money list. And with the waitress pool at every diner, drive-in, and dive on tour. I mean, just like the good old days. And he played some wizardly wedges, getting it up and down from some crazy spots. And at least he gave himself a chance to make the weekend. Remember, this is a guy that had the straight up shanks and yips not that long ago. And even worse for his career than his wrecked back. I mean, somehow this guy's beating back the shakes. Once you get that, some guys never ever make it back. And apparently he has. As of right now, he's at least made it back from that. So there are your A's. Now let's get to the F's. This dude's driver continues to be an instrument of terror. And that's actually an improvement from the last time he teed it up at Torrey. Remember, Tiger told anybody who would listen that the changes he was making these last 2 weeks were going to pay off. That new stiffer shaft would eliminate that two-way miss. The extra degree of loft would help with his spin rate. And then he goes out on his first swing with the big stick and plugged one into a eucalyptus tree, and he made double. I mean, literally. The ball never came down. That ball was still up there, I think. And that wasn't even his worst tee shot of the day. We're getting to a point where every single time he pulls out that bazooka, they should sound an alarm just for the safety of the gallery. I mean, point blank, you cannot win a tournament if you can't play it from the fairway. And while he did manage to hit a couple on the way in, he still looks like a weekend hack with a driver in his hands. So, well, I guess I have to give the guy some credit for forcing himself to keep taking these reps in a tournament setting. He'd be so much better off if the guy just went to the first tee. Literally today, went to the first tee, pulled out the big dog, and snapped it over his knee. On the 9 holes that he had a driver in his hand, he was 4 over. Now look, I'm a radio host, I'm not some kind of statistician or mathematician, but here's a stat that the cat might want to consider. On the 6 fairways he missed, he was 6 over. On the 8 fairways he hit, he was 5 under. I'm not asking this cat to use the quadratic formula or quantum physics, but maybe just draw his own conclusions before unsheathing that weapon today. So, Tiger Honks, if you want to see the good, I'm not going to stop you. On a course that owns him, on a day where the guy could not find a fairway or a green, he's still somehow in that tournament. On a day where El Gato pegged it up with the reigning player of the year, Justin Thomas, and a 4-time major champ, Rory McIlroy, the cat held his own. He didn't embarrass himself. He didn't re-injure himself. And his latest back surgeon has earned every single penny. Because after Tiger took some swings that would have left him lying in the kikuyu grass, before that spinal fusion, this guy's still standing upright. That's the good news. He's still standing upright, even though he was swinging out his ass. But the goal is, after all, to win. And right now, Tiger is T63, and he's got some work to do just to get to the weekend. But credit to the cat for this. It wasn't boring. This guy's played a lot of golf on the PGA Tour. 1,184 rounds to be exact. And yesterday was the only time where he hit seven fairways or less, but still managed to card five birdies. So when I asked him for an A or an F, the cat gave me both. As good as his short game is, his long game is that bad. And as long as that's the case, this guy is going to be grinding to make cuts and not winning tourneys. But it could have been worse. It's been a hell of a lot worse, hasn't it? You see, I've been positive on the cat now for an entire week. I'm keeping a very open mind about that cat. We're joined right now by the head basketball coach at Providence College. He is in his seventh season as the Friars head coach. He has led Providence to four straight NCAA tournament appearances. They had a huge win Wednesday, knocking off number two Villanova, 76-71. They're at Butler tomorrow, noon Eastern. A friend of the program, Ed Cooley, is my guest. Ed, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, how are you? Thank you. Thank you for having me on again, brother.
Always good to have you on. Ed, great to talk to you once again. You beat Villanova Wednesday in a game where you had the lead. They made a couple of late runs, but you were able to hold them off. So first things first, Ed, how proud were you of the way your guys handled that pressure of the moment against a very good Villanova team?
A great Villanova team. I thought our players were resilient. We made some timely baskets, but we had some good leadership from Cartwright, Bullock, and Lindsay. I don't think we got Villanova's best shot. I don't think it was one of their better games they played, but at the same time, I thought we were physical and we were fortunate to win.
Now, you've had some great wins at Providence College, but after the game you said that that was the greatest win you've ever had there. I've got a couple of ideas as to why that might be the case, but can you lay it out for me? Why was that one so special to you?
Well, you know, coming off of me, we've been very sick. We've had a lot of injuries like many teams in the country. We came off a very disappointing home loss to a talented DePaul team. So the morale was down. And just to turn it around in 72 hours to play that well at home, it just was very refreshing for us.
Now, on top of that, Eddie, when you're given the sickness and the injury and that tough loss to DePaul, to turn around that quickly and to beat a good Villanova team like that, specifically, what does that say about the mental and emotional toughness of your team?
Well, it talked about our senior leadership. You know, Kyron, Rodney, Jalen. I thought Diallo played a major role in it. I thought we got some good contributions off the bench. You know, it's just a program win, a culture win, and anytime you compete against a Jay Wright team, you got to knuckle up. They're very efficient.
You do have to knuckle up. Ed Cooley joining us. Yeah, so I'm curious how you handled that exactly after the DePaul game, because it was disappointing. I would imagine on one level, it might be pretty tempting to really get into your guys, scream at the players every chance you get until the Villanova game, but that's not what you did. You said, quote, you can't go in there and be a maniac. You have to show great leadership and great poise and encourage your guys to step up to the next challenge. So how did you go about doing that?
You know, you look at that as a parent, you know, you tell your kid every day, do this, do that, do this, do that. And you got to pick your time and point where you got to go after them. And I didn't think that was the point. Guys were sick, just not feeling well. We didn't watch 1 ounce of film of DePaul. We just moved on, turned the page. It's time of the season. It's about moving forward.
You know, and also at this time of the season, it's about knowing who you are. It's about having that identity. But when you've had the ridiculous number of injuries that you have, how do you establish an identity? Or maybe does that become your identity, having to play through it all and develop a certain versatility?
Well, you talk about all those scenarios at the beginning of the season. And you talk about the other players being ready to step up at any point and moment. You know, right now you normally have your rotation. You got guys that, you know, they're going to get shots, where they're going to get them, the way you want to play. You just constantly build into their head, make sure you're ready when your number's called. And I thought our players responded to the bell.
Providence College head coach Ed Cooley, my guest. You know, the way the Big East goes this year, what's your reward? Your reward for beating the number two team in the country is to go on the road and deal with Butler in their place. So how do you get your team ready emotionally and physically for that game?
Well, you know, you can't have a letdown with respect to, you know, your execution game plan. We're here in Indy right now. We just came out of our practice. get them familiar with the gym. We flew in a day and a half early. You know, you got to get their mental mindset. You know, we're trying to become an NCAA team. This is a tough road test for OTUS. And Butler has lost a couple of really close games. So we got our handful.
Ed Cooley, my guest, you know, that win, though, put you right back in that conversation for the NCAA tournament. And you said you actually kind of like being under the radar this time. Quote, we don't want to be talked about. We're the little red engine just trying to come up the street. So what's the attitude and the mindset of that little red engine right about now?
You know, when you look at the red engine or you look at the red truck, you know, the engine that your heartbeat has to be tough, resilient, play with passion and emotion. That's what we're telling our players. You know, we don't care about any national attention. At the end of the day, we want to be considered one of the 68 teams worthy of being in the tournament.
You know, if we go back almost 7 years to your introductory press conference, you said at that time, not only do I believe we're going to win here, we are going to win, and we are going to win big. Now you're looking at a fifth straight NCAA tournament appearance. The program was not winning big at that time. So what did you see then that let you know that that would happen, and it would happen in a big way?
Well, I think a couple of things happened. One, just the energy and resources that are being provided at Providence College to give you the opportunity to be good. Then the realignment of the Big East. We lost some powerful brand names. You know, Louisville left, Notre Dame left, Pittsburgh left, Syracuse left, Connecticut left. And then it became a basketball-centric league. So that's also given us an opportunity. You know, and not only you got to believe in yourself. You can't go to the press conference and say, well, I hope to come in last.
Right.
You know, you got to sell a dream, and then you got to work at it.
If you go to the press conference and say you're going to come in last, that's not winning the press conference. That's not winning the day. But one of the other things you said at the press conference was, we absolutely will set this place on fire, and if you're late, don't come in. So when you see the way the crowd reacted to the win over Villanova, is that what you were picturing during that presser?
Absolutely. Honestly, Jim, when I walk into the Dunkin' Donuts Center every home game, and it's sold out, and the fans are passionate and they're cheering, you really have to take a step back and you just think about where you were 5 years, 10 years, 15, 25 years ago, and just say, thank you, Jesus, I appreciate you, and you pinch yourself.
Say, before I let you go, do that for me, will you? Take a step back, because you and I have talked in the past about some of the amazing obstacles that you've overcome, some of the challenges that you've taken on away from the court. So how different are you now as a coach and a person than even you were when you first arrived at Providence?
First and foremost, a lot more patient, and even more appreciative as you see what the school has done to provide you the opportunity to run their program. You just take a step back, you reflect, and you say, thank you. I'm a much better coach than I was 5 years ago.
Providence beat number 2 Villanova on Wednesday. Next up, they've got Butler tomorrow. Once again, that game is noon Eastern, and they've made it to the tournament 4 times in a row, looking to make it 5. Ed Cooley, the head coach at Providence College. Ed, so good to get caught up. That was a great win for you. I know you've got another challenge coming up. Actually tomorrow. But great to talk to you once again, Ed. Thanks so much. Good luck to you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You too, Ed. Thank you. Ed Cooley. Well, new Mets skipper Mickey Callaway does, because he just dropped the quote of spring training and maybe even the year. But I'm guessing he regrets the word choices that he made.
Yeah, if I haven't thought it out the right way, that can definitely be a risk. We're going to be very diligent about that. Dry humping guys is something that I feel very strongly about, and that's a lot of wear and tear that's needless.
Uh-oh! That was a little bit awkward.
Awkward?
Calvin, can I hear that just one more time to make sure that I actually heard what I thought I heard?
Yeah, if I haven't thought it out the right way, that can definitely be a risk. We're going to be very diligent about that. Dry humping guys is something that I feel very strongly about, and that's a lot of wear and tear that's needless.
All right, so before the show comes off the rails and you can't handle something like that responsibly, let me pick him up. His heart was in the right place. His mind was in the right place. Not like many of you and your minds, which are flooding my ats with jokes that you know damn well that I can't and will not read on this show. Not as long as my name is on this show. But not since Tommy Heinsohn reported live from the locker room has a piece of audio thrown you clones this far off your game.
I took a look at Baines in the shower. He looks like all of Australia. He is really put together.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. All right, so let me help you with this. Let me explain this to all of you. Baseball guys talk in their own lingo. I mean, they live in their own world, but they talk in their own vernacular. They talk in their own lingo. Callaway is talking about using relief pitchers. It relates to relief pitcher usage and the notion that getting a guy warmed up and not using him is one of the worst things that you can do to a bullpen, something that Terry Collins did way too often. The kind of move that got everybody's favorite teenaged Mets fan ranting and raving.
Terry, show some f***ing emotion, you old ass, silly ass man. I want to punch the f***ing out of you, knock your f***ing teeth out. Now, who's going to be smiling? I will. Never show a smile. I mean, when you do, you're spanking the teammates at you. You're spanking Michael Conforto's f***ing sorry ass. That's what you're doing. So, Terry, goodbye. Have f***ing Wally Backman come over here.
This kid was amazing, right? He did not like Terry Collins. And most of all, he did not like Terry Collins smiling when things were not going well. So, Mick, let me help you out here before that kid loses his mind again. Let me handle this one for you. Consider this a lesson from the PR firm Van to the Smack. Here is what you should have said. We're going to be very diligent about the way we use our bullpen. I've seen the stats that those arsonists put up. I saw what happened last year when they dragged their gas can to the bump, soaked the entire infield with kerosene, and started flicking blue tip matches, lit matches all over that infield. I saw that 4.82 ERA that was the worst in the National League. I saw the 305 earned runs that we gave up, good for 27th in all of baseball. I understand we don't have a closer. I know we cannot keep guys off the bases, but I can control what I can control, and that is being efficient with my bully. That's making sure that when I do make a phone call to get somebody up and warmed up, that they're actually going to go into that game and not throw an extra inning or two just getting loose. The kind of needless wear and tear that can really hurt a team. Next question. That's easy. That's how you do that. When you're in the clubhouse, you can use clubhouse vernacular. When you're in front of the mic, stick to cliches and terms that will not break or melt the internet. My time, this time, is free of charge. Next time, it's going to cost you.
Dry humping guys is something that I feel very strongly about.
Time and place, my man. Time and place. And by the way, know your room. Know your room. The clubhouse is one thing. Talking to the media is another. Time and place. Know your room. Just write that down on a piece of paper. Time and place. Know your room. That one's free. The next one won't be.
Dry humping.
The only thing more amazing than me having to talk about a manager discussing dry humping.
Dry humping.
Is me having another take about a coach dry humping.
Dry humping.
Same show, different take, different coach slash manager. We'll get there. Lots to get done, but as promised, we are joined right here in studio by a former safety from Florida State. He was a first-team All-ACC-er, a freshman All-American, 84 tackles, 5.5 for a loss, 2 interceptions, 11 pass breakups, and he had a block kick. The NFL draft is coming up on April 26th through the 28th. It's in Arlington, Texas. I am joined in studio by Derwin James. Derwin, good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing today?
Doing great. Nice to see you here. You're getting ready for the draft, and I want to talk to you about that. But before I do so, I want to ask you about a tattoo that you have, and here's why I'm bringing this up. You've written about this, and it's of Florida State, but the importance is not necessarily what people may think it is. When did you get this, and what does that Florida State ink mean to you, and what did other people think when you got it at that time? So there's a lot to unpack there, but kind of give me the story of the tattoo.
Fortunately, I was offered a scholarship in ninth grade by Coach Fisher. Came up to Florida State, visited on a junior day. He gave me an offer on the spot. And I had committed to him, you know, like I committed freshman year. I told him I'd be coming to him in 4 years. He don't have anything to worry about. And I just growing up, I was always a Florida State fan. My stepdad was a big Florida State guy. And just watching the horse plant that spear in the ground, you know, it did something to me at an early age. And I just felt like getting a tattoo really of my favorite school, always where I wanted to go, and them being my first offer was just a symbol that I'd be really going there and something I always wanted as a kid.
Man, that's storybook stuff right there. So it tells me a couple of things, that this all went down in ninth grade. It tells me, number one, that you were that good that they could commit in ninth grade. Yeah. It tells me that even in ninth grade that you knew that's where you wanted to be. But the fact is, you knew long before that. Oh, yeah, I mean, it wasn't ninth grade. Yeah. Your earliest memory of Florida State was when you were about 5 years old and you were watching them on TV and you saw that spear being planted. So what do you remember about that as a five-year-old, and what kind of an impact did that have on you?
Just watching, you know, every child had a team growing up, and a lot of my friends were Florida Gator fans, Miami Hurricane fans, but I liked the Florida State. Like I said, that horse, it was something about the horse, man, just carrying the spear on fire, you know, and just planting right in the middle of the field, you know, it did something to me at an early age, and ever since then, I just started watching them, and fell in love with that program.
All right, so then one of your Little League games was in the summer before ninth grade, and Jimbo Fisher invites you to a junior day in Tallahassee. What do you remember about that junior day?
It was all upperclassmen there. You know, I was the only freshman, and the guys were a lot bigger than me, you know. Just coming in and going, me and Coach Fisher and me and the coaching staff, I had new Coach Odell. He was my local recruiter. He's from the area I was from, so I had a great relationship with him. And he called me, because I remember Coach Fisher calling me into his office. And at first, I didn't really understand what he was telling me because I was so young, you know, 14, 15 years old. I didn't really understand what he was telling me. And then it took me leaving the room and going back to Coach Hagan's office and him telling me, oh, you know, Coach Fisher just gave you a scholarship. I was like, for real? I would have committed. So we left Coach Hagan's office and we went back down to Coach Fisher's office. That's when I told him, I was like, I want to play for you. And then ever since then, it's been all Florida State.
So, like, you were like, literally, yeah, man, Coach is pretty cool. You didn't even know that he offered you a scholarship.
Yeah, I was so overwhelmed with, you know, just the whole thing. I could barely, you know, understand what he was trying to say. So it was like, Coach Hagan's really broke it down to me what he was saying. So it was cool.
That's a great story. Derwin James joining me in studio. So knowing all of that, I mean, this started at a very early age, and then you get there. What did it mean to you to put on that garnet and gold? I mean, that first time. What's it mean to you to be a part of the Florida State tradition?
Man, it means a lot. You know, a lot of people, you know, before my time sacrificed a lot for that program. And like I said, it's really a brotherhood there. It's not just what you see on TV. It's really, like, you just going there is just a thing of beauty. You know, you meet great people. You meet great coaches. And just the fan base there is just amazing. You know, just hearing that tomahawk every Saturday is just – that's an amazing feeling that you get.
Well, man, I could tell how much that program meant to you. I could tell how much you loved it there, playing football there, going to school there. But now you're looking at the next step in the tradition. And part of that tradition is becoming that next great Florida State DB in the NFL. Oh, yeah. And that means leaving school early. So knowing how much you love that school and your time there, what was that decision-making process like? And then how tough was it to say goodbye?
It was a tough process. I felt like, you know, just with me being injured my sophomore year, I just felt that, you know, I was leaving something on the table. But it was just, I felt like I came to work every day, and the people that I got to meet and the relationships I got to build was just priceless, and I feel like I put in enough work there with my teammates. And like I said, I had the opportunity in front of me was to take the next step, and you know, that was always been my dream and goal since a little kid. So just with that being there, you know, I wanted to take advantage of it, and just talking to my family and talking to my coaches and my former teammates, being supportive through the whole thing, you know, it just made the decision that much easier for me.
And I know one of the guys you talk to a lot and you still talk to is Jalen Ramsey. I'm going to ask you about him in a minute. But so clearly it's your time and you feel like you're ready. You touched on the injury your sophomore year. Now, you had this amazing freshman year, and then you have an injury your sophomore year. And it's like at that point you learn, man, this thing can be ripped from you in a second. Yeah. What was it like to go through that your sophomore year?
Well, it was a tough process because before I had never been injured in my career, all the way thinking back to Pop Warner. It was just tough, you know, getting through it. At first, I didn't understand why, because, you know, like you said, I had a great freshman year. I was just really starting to get – the game was slowing down for me. I was just starting to really learn the playbook and really know what I was doing. So it was just like, with it being taken away like that, it was like, all right, what's next? Now start over. You got to start over, building those muscles back up and just getting the playbook more and really, you know, not losing focus on what's your big goal. You know, I had a lot of questions, a lot of doubts, but, you know, I had – fortunately, I had great trainers and great people around me to help me get through the process and made it that much easier for me.
Derwin James joining us. He's getting ready for the NFL draft. So then all of a sudden, now it's all different, right? Now it's business. Oh, yeah. Now it's business. What have the last few weeks been like for you as you get ready for the draft? And what are the types of things you're working on right now? What's the new process?
Oh, man. I've been going through this process since December 8th. I've been out here training since December 10th. So it's been a very long process for me. I got to jump on everybody else. But it's like a two-a-day, you know. You come in the morning, you work out. You work out probably on the field. And then in the afternoon, you know, you're in the weight room getting it in. And then throughout the week, you know, you have different exercises that you go through, like yoga and rehabbing and just every little thing that comes with it. And it's just a grind. You know, every day is a grind.
Dude, yoga, there's kind of a misconception. Yoga's hard, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's very hard.
It's hard. So yeah. Is it hard? Is it hard mentally or is it hard physically? What's it do for you?
Oh, it does a lot for the body. I feel like at first, you know, it was tough for me because I had never really did it that much. We did it a little bit at Florida State, but it's helping me out a lot. You know, it calms the body down and it really gets the body loose and you recover faster. So I feel like it's playing a good part in this process.
Right, so I mentioned Jalen Ramsey. This guy's 2 years in and maybe already is the best corner in the NFL. He's been unbelievable. And I know he's been helpful to you in your process. The two of you talk regularly. What are the types of things that you talk about and what kind of advice has he given you?
Ever since my freshman year, just thinking back when I first got to Florida State in 2015, he's always been there, open arms. You know, he could have easily, you know, said, well, I don't care about this freshman coming in. But he always been supportive through everything. And anytime I ever needed anything, needed any advice, you know, he helped me watch film as, you know, as a freshman. And now to this day, you know, I could call him and we talk all the time. Just going through this process that you're entering, like you say, entering the business aspect of the game. And, you know, it's all on you, what you can provide and what you can bring to the table. So, like I said, he's just helping me get through this process.
You know, I heard you say something about him the other day that, like, when he goes on the field, he's got no friends. Oh, and you okay. said, this dude's a dog. This dude's a dog every single day. I love the line. What do you mean by that?
Man, I mean like, you guys might be on the same team, but if you're on the other side of the ball, he's not letting you catch a pass. He's not letting you get open. And he's gonna have that mentality that you may be on his team, but you're his opponent at that moment. So. And he's going to try to win every rep in practice, not just in the game. He comes to practice every day. And I learned a lot from just seeing that and just being around that
coach.
Like,
dude's relentless. Oh, like, yeah, really? Never takes a play off, never takes a rep off, never takes anything off, right?
Through the whistle. I mean, he's going. You may hit a whistle, but he's probably still going. So, you know, that's that dog mentality.
All right, so now you're getting ready. I know guys that you've listed as role models at safety. Sean Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Eric Berry. Earl Thomas, you know, given your size, given your athleticism, given your speed, this makes sense. How about Sean Taylor? I mean, you're a pretty young guy to know about Sean Taylor. Sean Taylor is just one of those guys, man. I don't care where you played or where you did it. Yeah. Everybody really, really admired Sean Taylor. What is it to you that made him so special?
It was just the way he approached the game, his passion for the game. I mean, Sean can do it all. Sean can play deep, man. Sean can come up and hit you. And when he hits you, you know, everybody feel it. You feel it in the stands. So, you know, he's just a great player, and he did it on every level. And like I say, one of my all-time favorite safeties. I feel like he's one of the best safeties to ever do it. So.
No doubt. What about Earl Thomas? What do you like about him?
Oh, he's more much smaller guy, but like I said, his passion for the game also, and his just relentless effort every play. You know, he's going to throw his whole body into you. You know, he's a student of the game. If you look at it, how he gets in and out of his breaks and just speed turning, playing the high, the post, and different things. So that's why I say Earl Thomas is a great safety.
Okay, what about Eric Berry?
Do it all safety. Very, very multiple safety. He can come up, cover tight ends, get in the box. Sometimes I see him filling the A gap. He's playing deep. It does it all safety too. So.
All right, so what about the combine? You know, you already know the combine is like the biggest job interview ever. Guys are measured at the combine. What is your strategy? Do you fully participate in the combine, and how are you approaching it?
Oh yeah, I'm doing everything. I feel like I got great trainers and great people that's been around me and that's prepared me for whatever may come in front of me. So I feel like I'll be well prepared and I'll be ready for whatever comes.
We're talking to Derwin James in studio for a few more moments. I saw draft analyst Matt Miller. He recently tweeted, Derwin James' end-of-year tape is top 10 grade-worthy. Dude started hurting offenses. So are you looking for this stuff? I mean, do you go to your phone and say, what are they saying? Am I looking for some motivation and fuel? Or are you just trying to ignore the whole thing and lock in on your process?
I'm just locking in on my process. You know, I see a lot of it. Of course, I got family and friends, you know. They see it and, you know, they send it to my phone. And, you know, I see it a lot. But I try to just, you know, stay focused on what I need to be focused on. And I feel like if I come out and do what I need to do, everything else will take care of itself.
What do you tell your family? I mean, I think anybody in your position, you have to manage the family because they take it personally. Yeah. They don't like it. Hey, you see this. And you might be like, some people run on that fuel, but other people don't want to hear it. So what do you tell your friends and family about all that stuff?
I mean, my grandma, she calls me almost every week. I see you going to this team. I see you going to this team. So it's like, I have to tell her, you know, grandma, nobody know where I'm going. So I just got to continue to work hard and just continue to get through this process. And, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Dude, I have to think you want to know where you're going to live, where you're going to work, what kind of system you're going to be in. These are things that you can't control. But do you have an idea? You're saying nobody knows. Do you have an idea where you might go?
No, I don't. Wherever I end up, you know, it's going to be a blessing and an opportunity that I'm looking forward to. You know, as a kid, you know, I didn't care what team I went to. So, as a kid, I said, I just want to play in the NFL, and that goal is
it's totally different, right? I mean, as a kid, you knew exactly what college you were going to go to because you decided early on you can't do that now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I'm just soaking it all in, and like I said, whatever happens, happens.
All right, so it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Knowing everything you've put into this, knowing all the sacrifices that your family has made for you to be in this position, do you have any idea how it's going to feel when you get your name called on draft night and you finally are a member of an NFL team?
Oh, man. I just feel like everything I ever worked for and everything my family has put me through and kept me on track, I feel like all of it's going to be paid off, and I feel like it's just going to be an amazing feeling that night.
Let me ask you one last thing. I mean, there's definitely a family and a fraternity at Florida State, and especially on the defense and especially in the secondary, and we know this. I mean, do you feel a strong sense of, like, brotherhood and family among guys who played in that secondary before you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Guys like Jalen Ramsey, Xavier Rose, Patrick Robinson, a lot of guys that Ronald Darby, those guys doing it on the next level, and you see they're still making plays. I mean, a lot of schools say they're DBU, but I feel like Florida State, we got the brotherhood, and we show it on the field on Saturdays and Sundays.
Another reason I asked the question, all right? Now, look, I'm old enough to be like your granddad, so I'm going to go old school with you. One of my favorite guys on the way up, we came up together, was my man Terrell Buckley.
Oh, man.
Do you
T-Buck.
Know T-Buck?
Oh, yeah, T-Buck, man.
Tell
me
about T-Buck.
Oh, T-Buck, amazing player, man. He ball hawk guy, gets the ball. No matter if you throw it in his way, he's taking it out of the way. So T-Buck, man. He's a great player.
Dude, I'm so glad you said that. I'm glad that he still resonates within that family and you know about him. That somebody, dude, you're going to go in the first round and you're going to have a really, really nice NFL career. I'm so glad you didn't shake me off like, yeah, I think I heard of that old guy. Because my man went up and got the ball and he was fearless, dude. Yeah. Fearless.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Him and Deion, those guys like that.
Deion, too. Oh, yeah. But I had something in my heart for T-Buck, though. Man, I loved him coming up. That was not a big guy, but he was an athlete now and not afraid.
Yeah.
Derwin, you killed it, man. Great job. Nice to see you here in studio. I know you're in L.A. getting your work in, so thanks for taking time between the two days to come in here and sit in the studio. Really good to have you on the show, and good luck with the draft.
All right. Thank you for having me, man.
Well done. Very well done. Florida State represented very well. He was a first-team All-ACC-er, freshman All-American, and he is a projected first-round pick and a high first-round pick at that. Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Tuesday to you. What's up? Great to be back. Hope you had a good weekend. I know I did. I hope you did as well. Sorry I took yesterday, but if I don't use it, I lose it.
You lose.
So I had to do it. First things first, believe it or not, I'm starting with the Olympics. America. Meet Chloe Kim.
Yeah! Chloe Kim, gold. In 2018,
Twitter.
When I finished my breakfast sandwich, my stubborn self decided not to, and now I'm getting hangry.
If I don't eat breakfast,
as a four-year-old, she learned to board at Mountain High here in SoCal. It's incredible. I am still the idol maker. We are compiling a database of the best callers.
Take that for data.
Hicks, if you call the show and you have any kind of game whatsoever, people will know about
it. What is happening in my fiance?
More now than ever.
You
should
step your game up.
I got major league takes for the millions watching.
Joined right now by John Smoltz.
Every player knows we should have won multiple championships. It was on us. We didn't get it done. When we look back, we realize no one in the history of the game will ever do what we did. But we definitely knew we should have won more championships.
He goes, are you the Hawk? I recognize you from your cat tattoo.
No.
Colgate, great toothpaste, terrible closers. But Donald Foyle ain't walking through that door. Gave myself a little tongue. Damian Lillard is my guest.
I'm not going to the studio during the season and writing a bunch of music and listening to beats and being up late and all that. So I'm able to function at a high level as an athlete. First things come first, but you know, also having that balance of doing other things that I like to
Episode
do.
24, Molly Bloom.
Life gets at one point, like whether it's a divorce or you get sick or you get arrested by the Fed, whatever it is, because I've created such a giant mess and found my way out of it, I have some solution around that.
100%. Molly Bloom.
He's won it. Gold for Shaun White.
Most amazing male snowboarder ever, without question. Let's just pump the brakes on all this redemption talk.
Here to talk about the Olympics, not, you know, gossip.
Athletic accomplishment, sure. Personal redemption, not so much. From South Korea, it's Martin Rogers, figure skater Adam Rippon. I really like my slutty costumes.
Jim, I love the way you do research, mate. You've dug that one out. Yeah. Adam Rippon is an absolute superstar.
Twitter!
Yes, I saw the photos over the weekend with Dane Cook. No, I'm not talking about it. Alvin, can you not hear me talking to you over the fat alarm?
Miscommunication. Got it. Okay.
You got that now, Alvin? Thank you very much. Denzel Perryman in studio.
You know what you're getting into when you go to Miami. You know, it's all about carrying that legacy. You know, especially being a linebacker and wearing number 52. You know, Ray Lewis came to talk to us. Put him to the side. You know, he asked me what number I was wearing. I was like, you know, 52. He was like, no, I'm going to be watching you.
Your tour stop to Detroit, and you brought up Ernie Harwell, and the crowd chanted Ernie for 5 minutes straight. What a class move you did there, man. What a great time.
My man, Tony, nice job.
It doesn't seem to matter to government that children are being...
I've done a lot of soul searching, trying to figure out what I can do. Something has to be done. This is not normal, and we're allowing it to become normal.
I don't think this is going to stop. And trust me, Jimmy, it's a sad day in America.
Lee Jenkins from Sports Illustrated.
Well, Lou just asked to buy the guy a burger. Only somebody with the magic of Lou Williams could pull that off. The guy just dropped the gun, and Lou walked him over to the McDonald's and bought him dinner.
Rondo. He's still not over it. Bringing up the tribute video. That has got to be the weirdest smack talk ever. And as always, weird is good.
Let's get weird.
Never change, Rondo.
7-foot-tall high school girl.
Joel Sherman joining us.
1 year Joe Charbonneau phenomenon.
Do you remember that whole thing? This guy could open up a beer bottle with his eye.
I unfortunately remember it because I was the genius who tried.
Asking the car salesman if you can drive by your exes on the test drive. Terrifying phrase than ruptured junk. I'm going to say this right into the microphone. I'm wearing a cup to work now after reading that story.
Oh, hell no.
I will sleep with a cup after hearing that story.
Losing his luggage.
Live from Southern California.
Oh, yeah. What's cracking, clones? Welcome to the jungle. I am Jim Rome, live in Southern California.
Dry humping, guys, is something
that Write that down on a piece of paper. Time and place. Know your room. That one's free. The next one won't be. Devin Powell is my guest.
And as he tried to pop his leg up and cut it to the side, his knee went straight down and just sandwiched my testicle against my pubic bone, and it exploded it. I could be negative about it, and like, why did this happen to me? But no, I'm talking to Jim Rome right now. It's pretty cool.
It was something about the horse. Man, just carrying the spear on fire and just planting
kick rock Rolex submarine.
Stop tweeting about Lyle and Eric Menendez.
I played off of
Danish Cook.
Well, you go to Red Lobster.
From Red Lobster.
Gacked out.
Thanks so much, Jim. I love coming
out. Baggy shirt like Brian Windhorst wears in the pool. Rolling eye, little nitwit.
Time shine.
When I used to hang out with Abraham Lincoln.
You're embarrassing.
That I was what?
Chasing balls.
You're on, dude.
T-Buck, man.
Fantastic.
Good night now.
T-Bock, man, I love that. There you go, clones. Now we're done. If you're jumping into a three-day weekend, go ahead and enjoy that. If not, I've got you covered right here on Monday. Check back then. I'm out.